Dr. Fabrizio Macchiavini is our speaker tonight. He is the director for the restoration of the Sistine Chapel. Since his appointment in 1972, he has been responsible for the Vatican's Department of Byzantine, Medieval, and Modern Art. Dr. Mancinelli was born in Ronchi, Italy. He was educated in Milan. He earned undergraduate and graduate degrees in art history. He is a teacher and frequent lecturer. He maintains an active research program, and he has produced numerous articles and has been in charge of a number of exhibitions featuring the artists and their works in the Vatican. Of special note in this regard is his major contribution to a volume entitled The Sistine Chapel, The Art, The History, and The Restoration, published in 1986. Dr. Mancinelli's lecture tonight is entitled The Frescoes of Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel and Their Restoration. He has graciously agreed to entertain a few questions from the audience at the end of his presentation this evening. Dr. Mancinelli, we have looked forward with great anticipation to your presentation this evening. Our imaginations have been teased with the prospects of being among the first to see mysteries uncovered. We welcome you to Memphis and to Rhodes College.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Can you hear me enough? Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for coming here. I hope you won't go away disappointed. And please forget my Italian English and the mistake that I might eventually do. So, let's start with trying to give you an idea of the place where the restoration takes place. And on the left, you have a view of the Vatican, as you might see if you will go by plane to Rome. And if your plane might pass over the Vatican. Now, this is St. Peter's Square. This is obviously St. Peter. And this is the actual residence of the Pope. This wing was built in the 17th century. But the residence of the popes that gave the life to the Sistine Chapel and to its decoration, that is to Julius and to Sixtus the Fourth, was this wing around this courtyard that you see here. This is the Sistine, and this is the Borgia Tower. And this big courtyard was called the Belvedere Courtyard when this area was not built as it is actually, and the view was different. Now, in this slide, you see the same area, more in close up. This is the palace of Julius and Leo X and Sixtus. This is the Borgia Tower. And this is the Sistine. And here you have the Basilica of St. Peter. The chapel next to, The chapel bears the name of Sistine simply because it was built by Sixtus the Fourth, the uncle of Julius II, that is the Pope, who called Michelangelo and Raphael to Rome. The chapel was built on the same site of a medieval chapel, probably which probably had the same dimension of the actual one. According to the documents, Sixtus destroyed the old chapel and built the old one. Personally, I think that Sixtus destroyed the old chapel to the height of the windows that you see here, emptied the building as you do now with an old building that you want to restructure, and then built the upper part with the crenellation and the big room for the soldiers. To decorate the new chapel, Sixtus called from Florence a group of painters who had the workshop in that town. Florence was, in the second half of the 15th century, the equivalent of what Paris was in the second half of the 19th and at the beginning of our century. The group was led by an Umbrian painter, Perugino, and was composed by Botticelli, who painted this fresco, by Cosimo Rosselli, Ghirlandaio, who was the master of Michelangelo as a painter, and later on by Signorelli. These painters depicted on the side walls and on the entrance and the altar wall of the chapel the stories of Moses, this is one of them, and the stories of Christ. And on the upper walls, they made a series of popes. And here you see an example. This is the total and this the detail. And this is probably, again, by Botticelli. You see how the face is carefully designed, and the contour is emphasized with a black line, which is so typical for this painter. On the ceiling, where Michelangelo, between 1508 and 1512, painted the actual decoration, Pier Matteo d'Amelia had represented a blue sky with golden sky, with golden stars, in the tradition, in the old Gothic tradition. We don't know if here he had represented anything, because no trace of the decoration of Pier Matteo d'Amelia has been left. And the only document that we have is this watercolor made by Pier Matteo d'Amelia himself. The chapel of Sixtus IV remained safe only for a few years. I mean, it was decorated by Perugino, Botticelli, and the others between 1481 and 1483, and in 1504, on the ceiling, there are open long cracks which damaged very seriously the blue sky of Pier Matteo d'Amelia, and that determined the will of Pope Julius II, who was the actual pope at the moment, to make a new decoration. The cracks crossed the chapel from this angle to this other angle, and this view of the vault before the cleaning, you can see the cracks in this position. They go straight from this angle to the angle on the opposite side of the chapel. To repair these cracks and to put an end to the situation, the Pope called, Pope who was the nephew of Sixtus IV, called Bramante, who was the actual architect of the palaces of the Pope. And Bramante installed these bars of metal, which in architectural language are called chains, he chained the chapel to prevent the movement that the side walls of the chapel were doing. The reason why the chapel had these movements was that Alexander VI, at the end of the century, of the 15th century, and later Julius, had started building both on the north and on the south side of the chapel. Alexander had built the Borgia Tower that I showed you before, and Julius had started building the new Basilica of St. Peter, destroying the old Constantinian Basilica and building the actual church. Now the Sistine is on top of a hill, and the ground on which it was built was not very solid, especially because of infiltrations of water, and digging on both sides of the chapel, the ground started moving, and this determined the cracks. This that I'm showing here is a lacuna, a loss in the decoration of Michelangelo, which corresponds to the beginning of the cracks. And as you can see, below the plaster of Michelangelo, which is this one, the painted plaster of Michelangelo, you have these bricks put diagonally to fill the crack, which was very, very large and very dangerous. This photograph is interesting because, as you can see, the decoration of Michelangelo covered originally the crack and the bricks which had been put inside the crack to fill the hole. But since the movement went on for the first half of the 16th century, the crack opened again and damaged the decoration of Michelangelo. Anyway, the reason why Michelangelo painted the ceiling, one of the reasons, was certainly, as John Sherman pointed out recently, the fact that the decoration of Pier Matteo d'Amelia had been seriously damaged by these cracks and by the movements of the chapel. So in a sense, Michelangelo can be considered the first restorer of the Sistine Chapel. Now, the problem of the cracks found a solution around 1570, when there took place the first big restoration, both of the buildings and of the paintings in the Sistine. The chapel was buttressed, and that is, they built two buttresses outside of the chapel that held it tight. And from that moment on, it seems that the chapel didn't have any movement anymore. But the main problem of the chapel was determined by the fact that to illuminate it and to make the heating, they burned quite a lot, and they made quite a lot of smoke. They burned candles, they burned charcoal in braziers, they burned oil lamps. And all this determined the quantity of smoke that dirtied very quickly the frescoes. Now, Michelangelo finished to paint the chapel in 1512, and in 1518, the master of ceremonies of Pope Leo X, who had succeeded to Julius, asked the Pope to charge two people to clean periodically the chapel, to dust periodically the chapel from top to bottom. But it was only under Paul III in 1543 that these two peoples were fixed in their position, and they were put in charge to clean periodically the chapel, to dust the chapel. Now, dusting was not obviously sufficient, and from time to time they had to make real cleanings. A cleaning took place in 1570, one in 1625, and the last one, before the one of this century, in 1710. The cleanings were made with very simple methods. They used water and sponges. They used bread, and they used wine. But even if the method, bread and wine, was very Eucharistic, it didn't have the real effect after a certain time. And in 1710, probably in 1710, this kind of cleaning became totally inefficient. The restorer of the time, whose name was Mazzuoli, decided then to make a trick. He decided to varnish the ceiling and to change the point of refraction of the light so to revive the colors. To varnish the frescoes of the ceiling, he couldn't use the varnish you use on a painting on canvas or on a panel painting, because the plaster is too porous and would have absorbed the varnish. So he used a very cheap kind of varnish that is the glue used by carpenters. Now, the glue gave a good effect probably for 30, 40 years. But unfortunately, it altered, it became brown, and it gave the frescoes the brownish color that they have actually. The presence of the glue prevented any cleaning. It was not possible to remove the glue without acids, without something that would damage the frescoes, and prevented any cleaning until very recently. In this century, there were two campaigns of restoration, in 1904 and in the 20s and 30s. But both of them, the first one done by Seitz and the second by Biagetti, did only the consolidation of the plaster. That is, they had exclusively a conservative character. In 1964, Dioclesio de Campos, who was my predecessor, started cleaning the stories of Moses and of Christ. He ended the work in 1972, and in 1980, we decided to start the cleaning of the popes. But since the scaffold was high enough, we decided to have a look to the frescoes of Michelangelo and to see which were their conditions, and to start trying to understand, foreseeing that we are going to clean them in the future, trying to understand which was the technique and which was their state of conservation. And the moment we moved the scaffold to the height of the frescoes, we realized that there were several small losses, small and bigger losses of color. You see them here. This is enlarged, but all the small white dots that you see on the surface are small bites of color that have fallen down. These losses could be as small as the ones that I showed you before, or could be as large as this one. Here you see another loss which has been stopped in the past and retouched. And since the retouching was a tempera, a secco, with a color that contained a glue, it altered in the course of the time. But this is interesting because very evidently, when the restorers, probably in the 30s, stuccoed this loss, this didn't exist. And this means that the damage is something that goes on. It's something that every year becomes becomes greater. Now, the cause of these losses is exactly the glue. The glue which contracts with the changes of temperature and of humidity, and contracting, it detaches. It made the detachment of the painted surface, and this causes these losses. Now, there was the doubt that the glue could be original. I mean, could be a sort of finishing layer put by Michelangelo either to protect, as it has been said, or to give a more precious aspect to the frescoes to revive eventually their colors. Now, this is what we call a cross-section. That is, we have detached a small bite of color. We have put it into resin. And then we have cut the resin and the bite of color so to have all the layers from the part that goes towards the plaster to the parts that belongs to the color. Now, from here to here, this is color, and it appears so bluish because this photograph is made with a wood light. Wood light is a particular band of the infrared light and shows better all the foreign substances that can be put on the painted surface. Now, as you can see, it has made brilliant this small thread that you see here over the surface. This is the glue. The glue, which is an organic substance, which is excited by this wood light and gives this fluorescence. Now, between the glue and the color, you see that there is this black line. This black line is dirt. Now, if you have dirt between the glue and the color, this means that the color remained exposed for a certain number, a certain deal of time, certainly not days, certainly not months, probably years, and probably more than 10 years. So the glue is not original, doesn't belong to the technique of Michelangelo, and was applied later, as I told you before, was applied later to revive the colors that was impossible to clean anymore. Next. Sorry, but generally I have somebody. No. Oh, thank you. Yes, these two. I always forget. Anyway, this is another photograph taken with a wood light. And they show you the brush strokes with which the glue has been applied. Now, if it were a preparation, the glue would have been carefully applied following the contours of the figure. Now, as you can see, the glue is applied without taking into account neither the figure nor the background. It's applied simply to cover the whole surface. And since when it was applied, it was transparent, it was brilliant, the man who did the work didn't realize where it had applied the glue and where he had not. And in this case, well, obviously, some years later, the glue altered, and now we see the parts that he had forgotten. This one is one, this is the other one, and here you see the other. And you see how careless was the work which was done both with a brush and with a sponge. Well, this is a famous detail which has been variously interpreted, but this is simply the result of an area covered with glue, this one and that one, and an area where the glue has not been put. This is simply dirty, but there is not glue on it. These white things that you see here are small detachments of color, small bites of color lost. And here, you see the line over there. That one is a pentimento, which you can very easily see also before cleaning, an enlargement that is a correction, an enlargement of the face, of the line of the face in the upper part. You will see it cleaned later. Now, so one of the reasons why the glue was applied was to revive the colors, and this happened probably in the 18th century, as I said before. But local applications of the glue took place also before, probably starting from the 16th century, and probably starting only 50 years after Michelangelo had applied the glue, had done the decoration. And this why? Because the glue, the roof of the chapel, was very soon damaged. The roof of the Sistine Chapel is made in tiles. The wind and the elements, the weather, moved the tiles, so the rain could enter through the tile, could pass through the tile, fell on the vault, passed through the vault, and coming to the surface, to the painted surface of the frescoes of Michelangelo, brought on this surface, determined on this surface, white, large white spots of carbonates and sulfates, salts, that in many cases hid the design of Michelangelo. Now, to hide these white spots, they did apply the glue. This is a very typical case. Now, this is this is the detail of a lunette before the cleaning, and I would like you to notice the position of that hand, that it's leaning on the belly. This is the belly of a woman who is waiting for a baby. And here you see the same area during and after the cleaning. This is obviously during the cleaning. Removing the glue, you find between the paint and the glue the salts, these white things. And as you can see, they have both determined losses of color, because when they pass through the color, they pull, and then the color falls down. And also they have totally hidden the design of the hand. But even here, you can see that the design is not the same. And this is the hand after the cleaning. Now, the only retouching that we have made is this one. And this has been left as it was. And even if it is abraded by the salts, you can see that the movement of the fan is totally different from the one that you saw before. The hand is foreshortened, and it's pointing to the belly, to the baby that is coming. So the attitude is really totally different. The woman is not sleeping, but simply looking down, and the hand is looking, is pointing to the baby that will come out. Now, the problem, when we realized that the glue was making this detachment, we realized that we couldn't wait. And so we decided to make the cleaning of the cilia of the Pope together with the cleaning of the cilia of the lunettes. The problem was, which was the technique used by Michelangelo? Now, after months of research, tests, laboratory analysis, and so on, we discovered that the technique of Michelangelo was simply the same of all his contemporaries. That is the technique of fresco. Now, since not many of you know what fresco means, even if it can be a little bit boring, I'll give you a quick explanation, very quick. So fresco means fresh. It's a kind of painting, very simple apparently, but very difficult, because if the result is not perfect, the result is awful. There is no choice, either perfect or awful. It's a kind of painting. Well, the painter puts the plaster, which is composed by sand and lime, generally. In Rome, and here we are in Rome, instead of sand, you have pozzolana. Pozzolana is a volcanic rock that can be grinded in a very soft powder, so that the painter can work on a very smooth surface. Now, the painter puts down the plaster and then waits 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, and then starts until the plaster has become hard enough, and then starts painting with color diluted into water. He can work until the plaster is wet with this technique. When the plaster dries, he cannot work anymore like this. When the plaster dries, the lime, which is in the plaster, makes a chemical process which is called carbonatization and fixes the color, which becomes, in a sense, part of the wall. As long lasts the wall, as long lasts the color. If you want to work on the plaster after it has become dry, you have to work in a technique which is called a secco, dry technique. That is, you use colors mixed with a glue, or with egg, but generally if you work on wall with a glue. And the glue will fix the pigment when it dries. All the changes made on dry plaster are made a secco, that is, with this technique. Now, the lunettes and this kind of fresco are all made in good fresco, with no part a secco. Now, this is the lunette of Azor Sadoc, which is the first when you enter in the chapel on the right. Here you see a detail of it, and here you see a detail of the head. You see that the glue is not homogeneous. Where it's darker, there is more glue. Where it's lighter, there is less glue. Next to. Sorry. Thank you. Now, the first thing that the restorer, in this case Colalucci, does is to wash the surface with a sponge and distilled water. Now, this is what you find on the sponge, simply passing the sponge on the surface. I mean, the glue is still here. I mean, this is simply on the surface. And this gives you an idea. It's more than 50 years that nobody burns anything in the chapel. And this is the rest of the smoke that was produced at the beginning of the century. And this is the application of the solvent. The solvent is a cleaning mixture. For those who are interested, I'll say that it's composed by ammonium bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, put in a sort of jelly, which is carboxyl methyl cellulose. It's applied with a brush, and then you leave it, but please don't try on your paintings. It's left on the surface for a time that can change. Now, the time that's perfect in the Sistine is 3 minutes. So it's left on the surface for 3 minutes. The jelly, this jelly with ammonium bicarbonate and sodium bicarbonate, makes softer the glue. And then, with a sponge and again distilled water, we remove, the restorer Colalucci removes both the glue, the dirt which is on the surface, and the dirt which has penetrated the glue. This is the fresco, still wet. Now, when the glue was applied, made the same effect, revived the color, made them more readable, notwithstanding the presence of the dirt. After 24 hours, this is the situation. Now, we don't reach the level that we consider the best immediately, but we go down progressively. As I told you, this cleaning mixture works according to the time that you leave it on the surface. So we make a second application of glue. You see that there are parts which are still very dirty. And 3 minutes, 24 hours, and this is the final result. Well, obviously, this is generally speaking. You can find areas where the solvent has to be left longer because there is a major quantity of glue, or the solvent is left less because the dirt is less. But generally speaking, this is the procedure. For the ceiling, where there are parts a secco, the parts a secco are obviously not clean with this cleaning mixture, because this cleaning mixture is removed with water, and the water would remove the pentimenti a secco that are on the ceiling. So the parts a secco which are on the ceiling are fixed and then cleaned with proper solvents, organic solvents, which are proper of that situation. Now, the main problem was how much we wanted to clean the Sistine. This is the level of cleaning chosen by the campus. Now, the campus didn't make a complete cleaning. He made what we might call a half cleaning. He cleaned a little bit more the light parts of the frescoes and less the dark areas. You see that especially the greens of the trees are still extremely brownish, are still extremely dirty, and this because the restorers didn't dare to clean them more than that, and the campus preferred not to arrive to the level that we have chosen. This because he didn't know the situation on the ceiling. He didn't know which was the technique of Michelangelo, as well as we didn't know before starting. But the point is that Michelangelo works in a different manner, in a sense. I mean, the technique is the same, but the problem is that the way he applies the color is different from the way used by these masters. These masters have a very thick color, very dense color, which has a different tonality. Michelangelo uses washes of color. The color is always very liquid, very transparent. It always shows through the
color that Michelangelo has applied first.
So for instance, here you see the preparation. This area, which is in shade, has been prepared with this terra, the scala, dark, and then with the light color, he has gone over the surface, leaving the dark, which is below, show through. And you see how many passages, subtle passages of color, there are on the surface. Now, if you leave a grayish layer as much as you leave it here, this becomes darker, so you lose the half tone, and everything becomes flat. So we have not chosen the level of cleaning, but simply we have stopped when we have recovered all these subtle tones foreseen by Michelangelo, without which the image loses its volume. And here you see two other details. You see how extremely transparent is the color, and how the final effect, especially on this figures of Ignudo, on this figure of Ignudo on the ceiling, is that of an enamel. It's like an enamel, both for the transparency and for the polishedness of the surface. This is another case. See how watery is the color. This is a detail of the tree with the serpent in the scene of the temptation. Now the color is extremely liquid, like as if it were a watercolor. And as you can see, it shows through, it's a glaze. There is a glaze, a red glaze, a green glaze, and a yellow-white glaze. And the brush is so full of water that when it leaves the surface, it touches the surface, it leaves a dot, like here, and like even better in this detail here. Now, taking into account that this is enlarged a lot, but it lets you see very carefully how the plaster is smoothed and how the dots remain on the surface. Now, take into account that we don't reach the surface of the color, so to say. We always leave a layer of foreign substances on the surface. In this case, for instance, you see one of the first proofs that we made. This is the level, a level where no foreign substance is on the surface of the color. And this is the level that we have chosen, which, as you can see, is slightly different. We leave only a glaze, both for protection and to balance the eventual alterations of the colors that the color have had in the course of the centuries. In fresco painting, there's never a great alteration of the color, at least not as much as you have in panel and canvas painting, or in tapestries where the color are not earth color like here. Now, the greatest luck that we have had in the work is the fact that the frescoes are almost in perfect conditions. I worked in the Vatican since 1972, so it's 16 years that I see frescoes cleaned and not clean, and 16 years is not an exceptional length, but I must say that I have seen several square meters of frescoes, and I must confess that I have never seen frescoes in so good conditions. Now, this is a detail
So there is very little to do from the point of view of the retouching. And the type of cleaning that we do lets us do the minimum of retouching. While if we had chosen the level of the campus, we would have several problems of retouching to balance the parts remain darker and the parts more clean. Now, here you see the cracks that we were talking about at the beginning, the big cracks that cross the ceiling. This has been stuccoed, and this stucco dates back probably to 1565. It's wax and resin. And you see that there are a certain number of retouchings that go also over the stuccoed part. See that most of these retouchings are done with a glue that includes a certain deal of color, the brown color, and makes this strategio, this hatching, to try to give back the figure, the modeling that the dirt has totally hidden. Also, these things. We fill the lacune with watercolor. The watercolor is something that you can remove with the sponge and a little deal of water, and with this hatching, cross-hatching, so that from afar what we do is not visible. When you make a photograph and you want to distinguish the original from the modern addition, you can do it very easily. Now let us come to Michelangelo. Well, obviously, the most shocking and most obvious discovery is the color. The color is certainly different. Take into account that this photograph doesn't give you the sense of how dirty were really the lunettes. And this because when you take a photograph, you use electric light,